This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money on a Monday here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. I hope you had a great weekend. I'm Patrick Maher. It's great. You know, it's funny because the big guy, I don't know if it's necessarily funny. It's just one of those things that life constantly reminds you that it goes by quickly. On Tuesday, tomorrow, we're going to have the first of five college football playoff rankings. So that it just lets you, I mean, the season's over. Like, where did it go? College football, we've got week eight concluding tonight on Halloween Eve at Ford Field. Shout out to Ford Field. I remember when it was built. When I was a kid, we grew up, we used to go to the Pontiac Silverdome. And for those of you that don't know what the Silverdome was, it was legitimately a popcorn bag, silver in a dome that had a silver dome on it that was just blown up with air. So the air like rose and it was the ugliest eyesore in the world. It was just this huge, it's now abandoned and since been ripped down. Remember the Bengals and 49ers played in a Super Bowl there where snow all over the place. You know, obviously fond memories of going to the Silverdome and Pontiac to see Barry Sanders, but they built downtown in Detroit. They built the beautiful Ford Field. And tonight you'll see the Lions laying 7 hosting the Raiders as we welcome you back here on a Monday. Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, and of course, Dustin Sweetelson. This is Sharp Money. One of the things, we're going to get to like, love, loathe from the weekend. I will say this. You both know that I've kind of garnered an obsession with saying donk over the past month or so. And donk is a term for sports betting and also mostly poker when you just donk off some chips by making a bad decision. Amal knows what I'm talking about. But the problem is now I've got a dog. Her name is Jeezy. All I do is walk around saying, you want food, donk? You want to go for a walk, donk? You're a donk. I literally just, so she now believes donk. She just gets confused. But
she might think it's her name.
I constantly call her a donk.
She might think that you changed her name.
Well, first of all, two things. First of all, you got me in the habit because Saturday when there's an incomplete pass on third down and I've got a team, I'm like, who's that donk at quarterback?
I can't stop. I legitimately have OCD with it. I'm walking around. I go, get Starbucks. Thanks, donk. Because everybody's a donk. The dog, good morning, donk. Everything's donk. It's now turned into a positive connotation, negative connotation. I see somebody walking across the street when they're not supposed to. I whisper to myself, what a donk. Like I can't stop. Guy, I can't.
But how would we rank it? Is donk above or below Buster?
Buster is an old school term that my friends use growing up. Buster is not great. Like, you don't want to be a Buster. Donk is, you don't want to be a donk either, especially at the poker table. But it's kind of like, for example, I mean, I love the dog, but she's a donk. You know, she's a dog. Hey, what's up, donk? You want food, donk? How'd that taste, donk? But, so I can't stop.
Well, you've said it enough. It's gotten in me into that habit a little bit. But I want to go back to your comment about the Silver Dome. I object to your notion that it was a great place. You know, I live 3.5 hours away from where you grew up, in that great bastion of hotbed of tourism called Cleveland, Ohio. Mm. And let me tell you, we used to go to that place called Municipal Stadium where you thought you'd break your neck going up and down the upper tier stairs in about 12 degree weather while you guys were sitting there without your jackets on in that what looked like the eighth wonder of the world, the Pontiac Silverdome. I mean, I'm telling you right now, from Cleveland, we thought it was the greatest stadium in the world. I've never seen a game inside the Silverdome, but I can tell you, we'd sit there and go, wow, to have a dome when there's 4 feet of snow in December and 8 degrees. Oh my God. You'd go to Municipal Stadium. The only stadium I can compare to the old Muni Stadium is Rocky Top in Knoxville. It's so steep that you're literally scared walking down because if you take a tumble, it's over. It's going to be a wheelchair for the rest of your life.
For the kids, just Google Pontiac Silverdome and you'll understand what I'm about to tell you. So do you guys remember back in the day when we were growing up, microwaves became very popular and there was this thing that you would stick in the microwave, the popcorn, yes. And just the whole thing would start to build. The silver dome of it would start to build as the pop, you know, the carcinogens started to fill up underneath because hello, that's what microwaves do. They murder you. Well, that's exactly what the Silver Dome was. They were just like, see, here's what we need. We need a dome, but we don't know how to do it. So they literally just put this like silver thing over the top and started blowing air into this huge orifice until it built. And they're like, yeah, we should play some football in there because it's cold in Michigan. It was such a dunk.
Do you guys feel old right now that you're talking about? I was there when microwaves were invented. One, they come with every apartment and house now. And two, there are kids listening going, what is Pontiac and why did it sponsor the dome?
Is it Pontiac the name of the city, though?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Pontiac is the city.
Isn't that the stadium where the snow collapsed the roof?
Yes, of course. When air is literally holding up the roof, like when you used to walk into the Silverdome, you'd open it and you just get blown back the whole thing was built on pressure.
Oh, it was like Star Lab. Do you ever have Star Lab in like high school, elementary school? It was this big like thing they brought in. It was blown up from air. It was a planetarium that you sat in. You never sat in that?
All I know is if too many people walked into the Silverdome at the same time, there could have been a catastrophe with the dome collapsing. Welcome to Detroit, Michigan. Okay, it's now time. Well, we don't necessarily love that, but it is time for Like, Love, Loathe.
Recapping the weekend of action with what we liked.
All right, all right, all right.
What we loved.
I had an awesome time.
Like, I know that you had an awesome time. Okay, I think the entire town knows that you had an awesome time.
And what we loathe.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
This is Like, Love, and Loathe on Sharp Money.
Like, Love, Loathe from the weekend. What'd we take away? What'd we get out of it? So I will start. And look, I was right there with them all. We absolutely crushed. Dustin, now just to prove his point, sending graphics during the show. Thank you, Dustin. We believed you the whole entire time.
Star Labs, I was crushed.
I believed, just like Amal Shaw. And look, it's one game, so we shall see, that Will Levis was a buster. Okay, he was going to be a bust, and he was a buster. He's out here eating banana peels. Who cares? however, you know, again, somebody that was thought of as being a top three pick. Sat all the way until the second round. The Titans moved up to grab Will Levis, and he made his debut yesterday. And in his debut, he went 19 of 29, 238 through the air, 4 touchdowns, no picks, completed passes to 6 different wide receivers. He had a 47-yard bomb for a touchdown, a 61-yarder, a 33-yarder, and a 16-yarder, 28. That is the point scored by the Titans. That's the most points all season. As a matter of fact, that's the most points since 2021. Also, he had 3 of the 10 longest touchdown passes by air yards this year. All quarterbacks, Will Levis. This was a crazy one that I saw as far as the stats. 3 touchdowns of 30 yards or more as far as air yards for Will Levis yesterday. The Titans hadn't thrown one, a 30-plus yard touchdown pass, in 42 games. So what am I telling you? It's the first win in 11 attempts for the Titans against a team with a winning record. We talked about DeAndre Hopkins, who went absolutely nuts. He had 3 of Will Levis's 4 touchdown passes as far as a receiver. It was impressive just because he seemed poised and he showed you what we all admitted. We said the guy has crazy arm talent and he has a great arm. If this is something that holds true, it gives the Titans in a bad division a little hope here. But again, the numbers are crazy, and 4 touchdowns and no picks for a rookie, that's one of all. But just the way he did it by airing it out, a team that, you know, you think of the Titans over the last 7-8 years, you think of play action with Derrick Henry and, of course, Ryan Tannehill. Now, all of a sudden yesterday, Will Levis was throwing deep bombs. It was pretty impressive for a guy that, admittedly, I crushed as well.
No question about it. You're absolutely right. And I like your selection for the like. And a couple of things. He looked like a guy that wore an Oilers uniform, but in the city of Houston, Warren Moon just throwing touchdowns all over the place. But guys, before everyone in Nashville starts getting excited about Will Levis, I want to remind people of a couple of things. There have been 2 quarterbacks previous to Will Levis in their NFL debut since the merger to throw 4 touchdown passes in a game. One is an all-time great, Fran Tarkenton. Another one played for this organization. But unfortunately, his career has not gone the way many of us would have hoped, and that's Marcus Mariota. In his first game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2015, had 4 touchdown passes. So I think it's a great selection you have there, and I think he made use of DeAndre Hopkins. I think that something that Tannehill and the rest of the quarterbacks have not done the last couple of years in terms of what he's capable of doing. But I'll just say this a little bit with Will Levis. let's just wait and see, because you know this very well, Patrick. You're a big college football guy. When you go back to his days at Penn State and Kentucky, there was nothing to write home about. I was still surprised he was a 33rd pick in the draft.
Yeah, 100%. And while I'm explaining to the kids about microwaves, let me tell you about my memories with Fran Tarkington as well. No, I'm just playing. I don't go that far back, big guy. Will Levis, the air yards were impressive. Hopkins, will he or won't he be moved? It's interesting. I joked when Hopkins signed with the Titans, like, what the hell are you doing? But he's been awesome this year.
And Hopkins looked like he was absolute toast until Levis came in yesterday and found him on those touchdowns. I was dead wrong about Will Levis. It has me wondering, like, what Mark Stoops is doing at Kentucky that he couldn't do something similar to this. If Will Levis does nothing for the rest of his career, he has already exceeded my expectations of what he could do in the NFL. Let's hear from Will Levis after the game.
I mean, this is a dream come true for sure. But I mean, we have what time is it right now?
3:48.
Yeah, I got 12 minutes to celebrate it before we're on to Pittsburgh, as Vrabel said. So, but I mean, like you said, I've been dreaming of this moment as a kid my entire life, even just to touch the field in an NFL game, let alone get a win, is incredible.
Vertical threat like that makes this team interesting, and I have to wonder if they're regretting trading Kevin Byard a week ago.
Yeah, especially in a division that's so porous. That was, yeah, it was interesting. And we talked about it. Look, if Taylor Heinicke starts that first half, even with the four touchdown passes from Levis, the Titans still potentially lose that game, because the Falcons had every opportunity at the end to march the ball down the field and win it. Van Jefferson with the drop. Like, love, loathe, Will Levis with the start.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Happy Sports Equinox Day. All four major sports are in action, and there's no better time of the year to be a sports bettor. And now with our Sports Equinox special, there's no better time to become a VSIN Pro subscriber. You can sign up now and get full VSIN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120, including our daily best bets, unlimited access to our betting splits, plus all our exclusive betting content for Major League Baseball, the postseason, of course, with the World Series, college football, the rest of the NFL season, March Madness, NBA, NHL, everything, even the NFL Draft. Don't miss this limited time offer. VSIN.com/subscribe. The Sports Equinox is upon us. VSIN.com/subscribe. Just got Steve Fezzik, professional handicapper. He sent over his notes. He's got a lot, and he's going to join us coming up in 45 minutes as we welcome you back here on a Monday edition of Sharp Money. It's VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Hope you had a nice weekend. We round out week 8 tonight. Ford Field, Detroit laying 7 with the Vegas Raiders in town, which we'll get to in just a bit, but we're right now getting into like, love, loathe, our likes, our loves, and our loathes from the weekend that was NFL. My like was Will Levis. Amal Shaw, you're up.
Yeah, the Dallas Cowboys, they're 5-2 overall, but more importantly, they're 5-2 ATS. And Patrick, this team, when you get them home in Jerry World, they're dominant. So far this year, 3 home games against the Jets, the Patriots, and the Rams. Now, none of these teams have been overwhelming from an offensive standpoint, but the Dallas Cowboys have managed to outscore their 3 opponents so far, 111-33. Average margin of victory in those games is 26 points. They have been thoroughly dominant. And I think when you start to look at the Dallas Cowboys and you're looking at a big number, yesterday the number was at 7 against the Rams. You know, it was funny, Patrick. Going into the game, I thought, maybe the Rams might be a play here. And then I kind of started looking at the Cowboys' schedule and some other things statistically, and I said, I'm going to stay off of this game. Dallas comes out early on, takes care of business. They wind up with a safety on a block punt. They were just so dominant. Dak Prescott, not here to criticize him. I thought he played a very good football game. He is a guy that really dominates inferior competition. And look, you can say whatever you want about him when the chips are down against a team like San Francisco or Philadelphia, fine. But for our purposes, we want a team that's going to cover a number, and they did exactly that. You look at this game, I thought Sean McVay could have pulled Matthew Stafford in the first half. He was getting beat up in this matchup. Dallas jumped out early, and it was over quickly in this one. And it was 33-9 at halftime, and it was over. And that's what you want on a team that you're going to lay a touchdown with, and a team in a particular spot. Dallas at home right now, they got the Giants coming up in 2 weeks, a good opportunity to destroy a team led by Tommy DeVito, who can't throw the forward pass. Get into that a little bit more when I talk about my loathes. But For me, take a look at this Dallas Cowboys team in some situational spots, particularly at home. Like them a lot, the way they play. They seem to answer the bell every time when they're in Arlington.
Yeah, that's a good point. A good distinction about them and how comfortable they look at home. And Dak certainly looks more comfortable at home. And Dallas became the first team with a defensive touchdown. Remember, they had that 30-yard pick six involved with Bland. They had a blocked punt and a defensive safety since 2017. So, and again, special teams, they were great. All three phases, the Cowboys were awesome in this matchup. And I think that was Dak Prescott's sixth career game with 300 or more passing yards. He had 304 and four passing touchdowns. So you're 100% right as far as them looking more comfortable at home. I like that situation. And that's a good way to start, like with the Cowboys, big guy.
Yeah. The thing with the Cowboys is they're beating up on the bad teams, right? And everyone gets one mulligan, right? The one mulligan's the Cardinals. The Jaguars have the Texans. Every team will get one or two in there. That's a throwaway. I give them a lot of credit for taking care of the Rams because they helped us expose how bad this Rams team is. They are not good. I think they got off to a better start than we thought, hanging with a lot of teams. But it turns out this is a total rebuild on the other side. So I think the Cowboys are good. But as long as Dak Prescott's the quarterback, they ain't winning a Super Bowl.
Hater. Legit hating going on.
His best day, he's not even Kirk Cousins.
Of the screen.
I like what you said about the Rams, and you're correct. They're not as good as we thought. But if I just push back with one thing, I think their schedule's been pretty tough. They've played the 49ers. They played Cincinnati in a real dire spot. The Bengals came in at 0-2 on Monday Night Football. The Eagles, the Cowboys. When you look at the end of the year, these are four teams that are going to be in the playoffs.
You know what's weird about the Cowboys? Because they show him incessantly. Has you guys ever noticed that Jerry Jones, he claps very oddly? The way he claps, it's like, Dustin, you're shaking your head no. Amal, you're shaking your head yes. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's a weird cadence with which he claps.
Oh, there's no question about it. I think it runs rampant in the city of Dallas. Mark Cuban's got a weird clap. Jimmy Johnson used to do the...
It looks like he's making it rain.
Exactly.
It looks like he's used to making it rain.
Right, which is, I mean, that's par for the course with Jerry Jones exactly. And also the clap. There's medication. I'm just saying. Okay. We'll move on. Hey, big win for a cowboy house, of course, VSIN with the Frenchman, Mr. Goulet. We had Femi. You've got Mr. Ross. When he's not watching MMA, he's breaking down cowboy tape. So it's a big cowboy's house. So happy to see them get a win. Your like, big guy.
My like is a team I was wrong on because they're just finding ways to win. And it's not always pretty, but we touched on them earlier, and that's the Seattle Seahawks. I think they need credit yesterday for separately from on the field from just play, but the throwback unis by themselves were absolutely splendid. Love seeing those come back. Who do you think of when you see those jerseys? You're both going to say Steve Largent, aren't you?
I was going to say Dave Craig and Steve Largent.
Dave Craig.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
Dave
love those.
Craig. Yeah, those two. Those literally are the two that popped in my head.
They should definitely go back to those full time.
I agree.
I like the color scheme better. But anyway, I mean, after yesterday, they're in first place in the NFC West. And I know it's taken the 49ers kind of falling apart the last 3 weeks, but they're still in first place, I believe, going into their bye here. And I think this organization deserves a lot of credit for the way that they develop guys and they draft well, especially late in drafts. Devin Witherspoon has shown up day one and been a game changer. Remember last year they discovered Reek Woolen. He was awesome on the other side. They're mixing in JSN more. That makes the passing attack more lethal. And they have as good of a 1-2 running back combo in Walker and Charbonnet as you're going to find in the league. They both can do everything. They find ways to win. It's not always smooth. It's not always pretty. And they do have that home field advantage. I need to eat some crow or some Seahawk on this one because I was incorrect about Seattle.
I like your breakdown. I think Seattle deserves a ton of credit, Patrick. I'd give credit to the coaching staff and 52 of the 53 players on this roster. To me, it was Geno Smith that hindered them yesterday, particularly in the second half, throwing bad picks late in the first half. But I do overall, this team defensively is very, very good. Give Mike Somich credit. He talked about this early in the season. He was on the Seattle Seahawks. He likes them a lot. I just don't think they're still in that same class as San Francisco. The injuries for me with Trent Williams and Deebo Samuel have been a big factor for the Niners. But you have to give the Hawks credit. They were in a game like the Jets yesterday. Jets found a way to win the game, and Seattle yesterday was really dominated for about 2.5 quarters in this game. They get off to a fast start, and then it was all Browns. But they find a way to get the victory, and they deserve credit for that.
Fun fact, yeah, too,
right,
by the way.
Which has been on Seattle. They're first place right now, big guy, so you're eating some Seahawk. Go ahead.
Yeah, fun fact, too. Jake Bobo, their tight end, caught a touchdown last week, had two catches yesterday. His father is Mike Bobo. But not Mike Bobo, who's the head coach or the offensive coordinator at Georgia. Just his dad's name's also Mike Bobo. Thought I'd share that.
That's pretty Bobo good. Out. Also, forced three turnovers defensively, ended up 10 points off of them. The one read thing does concern you with Geno Smith. I think that is a deficit. But adding Leonard Williams could be a bit of a difference maker up front. So I don't hate your Seahawk take. Don't hate it at all. 5-2. Impressive. Yeah. I also, here's an odd name that I think of when I see that Seahawk insignia and think about the throwbacks they were wearing yesterday. This is a weird one. Jim Zorn.
Yeah.
Oh, number 10.
Yep.
Lefty.
Lefty.
I also go Cortez Kennedy. That's the one that comes to mind for me.
I think he had the most unheralded Hall of Fame career of all time.
Cortez Kennedy?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a beast.
Yeah. He's great. Yeah. No, he was great.
R.I.P.
Okay. My love for today, kind of a weird one, but I think he deserves it. It's A.J. Brown.
Oh, yes.
His sixth straight game with at least 125 receiving yards. He had 130 and two touchdowns. That sets a new NFL record. So that's something for all the great wide receivers that have come through. A.J. Brown, again, the Eagles are your only 7-win team with the win over the Commanders yesterday. He just turned 26 in June. Think about what I'm saying about A.J. Brown. And I wrote this down in my notes, boys. I think Mike Vrabel and the donk that was the general manager at the time have some explaining to do, because at the time they traded away a 24-year-old A.J. Brown for the 18th overall pick that they flipped into Treylon Burks. Who knows what Burks turns into? My assumption is he's not going to be a top three wide receiver in football. And A.J. Brown is going to be that for years to come. Tyreek Hill is on a pace that is record-setting right now, over 1,000 yards through 8 games. How about this? A.J. Brown has 939. He's on pace for 1,995 receiving yards. That would be a rookie. That would be a record if Tyreek Hill doesn't get there first. So again, I've got him top three right now. I think the three would be Hill, Jefferson, and Brown. A.J. Brown's my love for the week, Amal.
Love the call by you, and no argument at all. But I will say this in defending Vrabel and the Tennessee Titans. I didn't think A.J. Brown was going to be this good when he got to Philadelphia. By the way, in terms of Treylon Burks, he's kind of right there with A.J. Brown. He's got 99 receiving yards on the season.
Yeah, he's close. He's close. A.J. just has 939, so about 860 more than him. But I'm sure he'll get there over his career. When we come back, we'll get to Amal and Dustin's loves. We continue Sharp Money on a Monday.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Check out the betting splits right now, VSiN.com. Money and bets for every game, updated every 5 minutes, straight from DraftKings, today's games, and future events as well. Get it now. It's part of your arsenal. VSiN.com, the betting splits. And look, we've fought many, many times about quarterbacks and where they stand in this league as we welcome you back. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetles, and I'm Patrick Maher. I'm going to say this, and I mean this so wholeheartedly. I don't even know if there's somebody I consider to be close to this person. Now, we're doing like, love, loathe. And because we're 40-1 with our free roll on the Bengals to win a Super Bowl, we were just talking about the big time defensive plays yesterday. Talked about Dylan the running back, Dan, like all that, Jamar Chase being underrated. But I'm contractually obligated to say Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football. But if you're holding a quarterback draft right now, for me, it's not Hurts. For me, it's not Josh Allen. For me, it's not Tua. Herbert. No, I don't even think there's somebody close to Burrow being that quarterback that I select after Mahomes. For me, it's a simple selection. You think about what happened the first year, a few games in, he got injured. Literally the next year, he took the laughingstock of the NFL to the Super Bowl. So this is a guy in Burrow. every time I watch him, I come away more impressed. And as he started to get healthy, I thought he was awesome yesterday. He's with a bullet to me, Amal, the second best quarterback in football.
I'll give you a quick hockey analogy, and you'll appreciate this one. Gretzky's the greatest player I've ever seen, and then Mario Lemieux second. But when you look at the distinction between Gretzky and everybody else and then Lemieux and everybody else, that's how I feel about Mahomes and Burrow. Mahomes is on a different planet, and Burrow's on his own planet. He just might not be on Mahomes' planet, but my God, is he good. And Patrick, that's going to take us into my love, the Cincinnati Bengals as a team. When you look at Joe Burrow yesterday, guys, 28 for 32. Patrick and Dustin, I know you guys have been out at NFL practices. Guys during skeleton drills don't go 28 for 32 with no defenders. Okay, there are more drop passes in those sequences than what we saw against one of the premier defenses in the National Football League, a team that is the reigning defensive player of the year in Nick Bosa, an all-world middle linebacker in Fred Warner, and absolute dudes everywhere else. This team was thoroughly dominant. Every time the Niners rebounded with a punch back, the Bengals came back with a stronger punch and took the lead. They were outstanding in terms of what they did. They get the turn. They have a turnover. They come back with an interception. When you look at the Jermaine Pratt interception off of Brock Purdy late as they're driving in the third quarter, or might have been early fourth quarter, unbelievable play. Bengals take the ball, go right down the field, score. This thing is over, done and dusted. But more importantly, Patrick, why I think the Bengals are a great love for us this week is this. The Bengals are sitting at plus 280 to win this division. I'm going to tell you, like I said earlier, aside from the Niners dismantling of the Dallas Cowboys, I thought this was the most impressive road win by any team in the National Football League this year. A complete performance from offense, defense, and special teams. McPherson did miss one field goal of over 50 yards, but he rebounds with a 56-yard field goal. No problem. This team is thoroughly dominant on all three phases. Hendrickson kind of bangs up his ankle, comes right back out there, takes advantage of the fact there's no Trent Williams on the left side for the 49ers. He has a very good football game. I think with the Hubbard and Hendrickson pass rush, this team is dangerous. They got a pretty solid secondary. And then we haven't even talked about the offensive side of the ball. You mentioned Ja'Marr Chase. For people that are not familiar with Ja'Marr Chase, absolute superstar on that 2019 LSU team, but he was not drafted in the 2020 draft. Why? Because he was only a sophomore. He opted out due to COVID. He doesn't play just like Micah Parsons his junior year, and he's the fifth overall pick in the draft. There is nobody that can contain this guy. 10 catches for 100 yards and a touchdown. We talked about a couple of weeks ago against Arizona, 19 targets, 15 catches. A thoroughly dominant football player who is on a different level. I think there's a clear point for me of five receivers. Adams, Chase, the kid down in Miami, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, and A.J. Brown. Those five guys are just on a different level compared to everybody else. You never see Ja'Marr Chase get caught from behind. The play calling with Zach Taylor is outstanding. And then Joe Scheisty comes in there and he says, this is why I was the first pick in the draft. This is why LSU was the highest scoring team of all time. And this is why I took a sack of potatoes to the Super Bowl with Ja'Marr Chase and I a couple of years ago. And we got hosed because we're in a smaller market and we're not big market Los Angeles. That's why we don't have a ring right now. But guys, we're going to make up for unfinished business. Plus 280 to win the division, 18-1 to win this Super Bowl. It's over. The Bengals are coming.
Tremendous. And I promise I wasn't trying to steal thunder. I didn't look at that part of the rundown, so I didn't know you had the Bengals, but that was a perfect lead and perfect parlay. And you took the baton and ran with it. Joe Scheisty's a great nickname. I totally agree. Look, we're going to continue to do the Bengals shtick on the show. Why wouldn't we? We're 40-1 on them, but you like what you saw, big guy. And do you agree with Amal and I with a bullet, second best quarterback in football?
I think you make the case he's the best quarterback in football if you really want, and you don't have to try all that hard.
Careful. That's illegal. You can't say that about Mahomes.
Don't have to try that hard. Patrick Mahomes has Andy Reid, one of the greatest play designers of all time. Joe Burrow is carrying Zach Taylor by his underwear and a wedgie into the freaking Hall of Fame at this point. What are you talking about? Zach Taylor is the biggest donk of the donks. And Joe Burrow is making him look like a competent head coach. Are you kidding me? Let's hear from Joe Burrow after the game, because one thing was definitely clear yesterday. His legs are starting to feel healthy.
Yeah, tough to break those down. They just kind of happen. Really, that was athleticism, acceleration, explosiveness was really a big focus of mine in the offseason. I just haven't really been able to show that too much. So it was nice to have that hard work pay off.
Love him. Joe Scheisty. Was that his nickname? I love that. I'd never heard that before.
At Ohio State?
LSU.
Oh, is that LSU?
Yeah.
Something about, like, if he was the quarterback of the Lions, it would make for a very fun decade. Like, there's just something about him that you like, you gravitate towards.
First of all, I think it's just his disposition. The guy is like a team guy. You know, for people that don't know his background, he's from Athens, Ohio. His dad was the defensive coordinator under Frank Solich for the Bobcats. Wins Mr. Football in the state of Ohio, is at Ohio State. Him and Dwayne Haskins sit behind JT Barrett. And everyone goes, well, you know, why did they go with Dwayne Haskins, who ended up being a first-round pick? What people don't know is Joe Burrow had broken his hand in spring ball. And so that's why he didn't end up having an opportunity to compete for the job. And to Urban's credit, he said to him, listen, this is the situation. Burrow gets his degree. Transfers to LSU. 2018 is an okay year. And then they go down to Austin, Texas, the second weekend of September. And that's when we saw the coming out party for LSU, the two receivers, and Joe Burrow. And I got to tell you guys, I know it's early, but man, you could have three guys from that 2019 team that wind up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Well, I mean, we got a long way to go, but there is nothing. The only thing stopping Justin Jefferson at this point in time, God willing, is he doesn't get injured. This guy is a first ballot the way he's going. Joe Burrow, as you guys both just alluded to, second best quarterback. And it's not just, like, to me, this greatness of Burrow is like when we had Marino, Montana, and Elway, right? Those three guys were so good, you just knew they were better than everybody else. That's how I feel about Mahomes and Burrow right now.
Another point to Burrow having an argument. I'm not saying he is, but having an argument that he's better than Mahomes. The 2019 LSU team, who was it coached by?
Ed Orgeron.
So he carried that donk to a national title, and he may carry Zach Taylor, another donk, to a Super Bowl.
I don't know how good of a recruiter Zach Taylor is, but I know this about Ed Orgeron. Adrian Peterson's father was incarcerated in the state of Texas. He tried him getting relocated to the state of California to sign one of the greatest running backs in the history of football.
He can recruit, but Ed Orgeron had been a head coach before, and it never worked.
Hey, he got 15 guys drafted in 2020. Ed O was bringing in the right guys. He can talent evaluate. He may not be able to coach, but he can talent evaluate.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's a donk, but he hasn't put a shirt on since he got fired. So there's that.
Also, he's never done like that. Right,
we get it. You do steroids. It's just playing. That's slander. I'm just joking. Okay.
Work out six days a week and juice on Sundays.
All right. We do have news out of college football just quickly. I mean, you know what? We'll break the news after the big guy's love. Go ahead, big guy.
Yeah, my love's a simple one. I just think this team might be criminally slept on at this point in the year. And the Jacksonville Jaguars are tied for the best record in football at 6-2. You look at their season so far, they have a loss to the Chiefs. They have a loss to the Texans, which was brutal for all of us. We had them in Survivor. But outside of that, I think they should get a lot more credit for what they've reeled off here. Since they lost those two games, they've had five straight wins, two in London, and then the last two on the road at New Orleans, at Pittsburgh. Both those teams aren't really great, but you know what? Those are two really good defenses, and those are two difficult places to go win at. They did it back-to-back weeks at New Orleans, at Pittsburgh. I think Travis Etienne has looked awesome at running back to full strength. And outside of the Houston game, they haven't allowed an opponent to score more than 24 points against them. I think they're a real threat in the AFC. I think they need to be taken seriously. And I think they're a team that could be hitting their stride at the right point in the season.
We were talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars a little bit during the break and just how, I don't know, Peterson, we used the term donk. I don't know what it is, but at the end, as a running back, ends up being the right pick. There's chemistry, obviously, with he and Lawrence. So good things right now with the team that once they went to London, it felt like they kind of rejuvenated themselves and have come back and continued it.
I think the wins against Atlanta and Buffalo really catapulted this team. And you guys are absolutely right. When you look at that division, they could potentially be a team that could have the best record in the AFC at the end of the regular season.
A much maligned offensive coordinator in college football is on his way out. We'll give you the name coming back here, Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Today is the Sports Equinox, a day where all four major sports are in action. And to celebrate, you can be and bet with the VSiN Sports Equinox Parlay at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, our four-team parlay is this. The Hurricanes, Flyers over 6 goals. Lions, first half, 4.5. Diamondbacks, first 5. And the Magic, catching 4 against the Lakers. Just look for the VSiN Sports Equinox Parlay on the DraftKings Sportsbook app today. And you can bet with us. DraftKings. The crown is yours. We welcome you back. Brian Ferentz is out as the offensive coordinator, or will be after this year. Of course, his dad, Kirk Ferentz. I saw a total today. Right now at DraftKings, I believe it's 30.5 with Northwestern in Iowa. I saw it as low as 29.5. Of course, some nepotism there. So the athletic director at Iowa, actually, Amal, released a statement announcing he wouldn't be back, because I think there's probably some awkwardness there with his dad and his son running the offense.
Well, you're absolutely right about that, and it's just been pathetic what we've seen out of this Hawkeyes team. I don't know if you guys subjected your guys self to just watching horrific football between Minnesota and Iowa 2 weeks ago. And the Iowa defense played phenomenally well, like they do every week. And Phil Parker's defense is always great. But for some reason, Kirk Ferentz just doesn't believe in the forward pass or anyone that looks like they know what the forward pass is on offense. They scored 10 points and lose a football game. And mind you, Patrick, in that game, Minnesota started a drive at the Iowa 10-yard line. Still couldn't get it in the end zone.
Yeah, Minnesota, not the greatest show on turf, no, exactly. To say the least. Yeah, big guy. Also, your Leonard Williams traded from your Giants to the Seahawks. Quickly on this, and then we'll get back to Like, Love, Loathe and Fezzik coming up at the top of the hour. Schefter's reporting any long shot chance of a potential Derrick Henry deal diminished even further today at the 4 p.m. Eastern deadline, where there was a time that he could restructure his contract ahead of Tuesday's trade deadline. Remember, Tuesday, tomorrow, the trade deadline at 4 Eastern. Henry has $5.5 million left on his deal. So, quote, I don't think it's going to happen, that being a trade of Derrick Henry from the Titans boys.
Interesting. Real quick on the Brian Ferentz thing. Brian Ferentz, the coaching tree he comes from, who would you think he learned under the most?
Don't know. Give me an answer.
His father. Whose offense do you think he's running right now? His father. Dad's. Who do you think is doing what his head coach is telling him? The son of the father, who's the head coach. Feels like the son is the scapegoat for Kirk Ferentz not wanting to evolve into 2023.
That just took a weird 180. You're defending Brian Ferentz?
I'm just saying it feels like he's being judged for the sins of his father.
I have a line Dustin would be proud of, but I'm not going to use it right now.
Yeah, I think that is some sort of therapy. Okay. So Henry, maybe there's some juice there with the Titans because of the Levis performance. Obviously, it looks like he's not going to be traded. Leonard Williams is a Seahawk. Let's get through all of our loathes, because we have Fezzik for an hour. My loathe is going to be, and again, I'm picking on him a little bit, but Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers. So a lot has to go right to lose 3 in a row when you have that much, a lot has to go wrong to lose 3 in a row when you have that much talent. Remember, this is also Shanahan and the 49ers, a 3-4 team last year going into the bye. They got McCaffrey and ripped off 15 straight regular season wins. So they head into the bye, the 49ers, a 3-game losing streak. They were completely outplayed, outcoached, out-executed yesterday, 31-17 by the Bengals, a 5-0 start, 3 straight losses after 15 straight, I mentioned it, regular season wins, but underlying kind of the 5-0 start, even some penalties and red zone miscues, just by measuring the talent to what's happening right now, I don't know, there's weird vibes. They've been outscored over the 3-game losing streak by an average of 7 points, outgained by 62 yards, which shouldn't be happening, and given up 15 plays of 20 yards or more. So the defense that has so much talent, all the sudden looks very susceptible. Again, it's a very good team, but what has Shanahan won? You know, I wrote down in my notes, just thinking about Shanahan, the 2021 NFC Championship game against the Rams. He probably should have won that game. There's been losses that don't look great for Shanahan. Can't blame him last year in Philly without a quarterback, but 3 straight losses. He's got way too much talent. I'll put my load there for Kyle Shanahan, Amal.
like that call a lot. In the first five wins of the season, San Francisco 49ers averaged 33.4 points per game. In the last three games, they've scored 51 points, 17 in each game. And this is what the problem is. The rubber's met the road against more competent teams, and they've been challenged, and now they've gotten some pushback. However, I love what you broke down about Shanahan and some of the failures he's had. He hasn't generated a lot of criticism in the past. But, Dustin, to me, I think this warrants exactly what Patrick said, and this is a proper load. But I still don't discount the Niners in the NFC.
No, but with that said, Brock Purdy has looked like a mortal. As the weapons have disappeared, they've been unable to scheme him up the way he looked like when he was a guy who was on like the longest winning streak ever for a quarterback over the course of like a season and a half. Last 3 weeks, three losses. He has not looked like the same guy. He's not making a ton of plays. And I think that's an indictment of Kyle Shanahan, who believes he can win with just about anybody at quarterback. So I totally agree with this.
I mean, it's a bit of a look. It's a very good football team, like Amal said. They're going to be there in the end. I just, he's often curmudgeonly. So three-game losing streak with that talent, I threw him in the mix. Time for Amal's loathe.
We're going to go to the New York Giants of Brian Daboll. Guys, this really boils down to a couple of situations. Tommy DeVito yesterday came in, and if you watch the game like I did, you want those 3.5 hours of your life back. But more importantly, this is a guy that didn't throw the ball past 5 yards down the line of scrimmage, or past the line of scrimmage. It was unbelievable, the ineptitude we saw. You don't even have a quarterback on the roster behind Tyrod Taylor that was capable of actually making a play. This Giants team was inept. But more importantly, this is really where Brian Daboll shows up for me, and this is the biggest issue that I have. They have a 10-7 lead against the New York Jets team that has not moved the ball all game, minus one play from Breece Hall. And that was it. That's how the Jets scored their touchdown. But with 4th-and-1 and about 28 seconds remaining, Brian Daboll chooses to go for a field goal that wouldn't put him up by more than a touchdown. It only still puts you up by 6 points at this stage. And the reason why I had an issue with it, even if Graham Gano makes the kick, Patrick, there were two chances that I thought the Jets could score on, a blocked field goal or a kickoff return for a touchdown. It was going to be a hell of a lot better than Zach Wilson running that offense. But instead of going with Saquon Barkley, he had over 100 yards rushing yesterday, and it was very effective in the fourth quarter against that worn-out Jets defense. He chooses to go with the Graham Gano 35-yarder. Gano misses the kick. So remember, the field goal, not only does it go from the 18-yard line, now it goes to the 25 for the spot of the ball. They hit a big play to Lazard. They hit a play, previously to Garrett Wilson, and then to Alan Lazard. They get in field goal range, tied up with 1 second remaining. But this loss is single-handedly, despite the fact that Tommy DeVito was the quarterback, simply needs to be pinned on Brian Daboll. It's rare that you can blame one person for a loss. The coaching decision to kick a field goal up by 3 with 28 seconds remaining is what cost the Jets a victory. They should have run the football, gotten the first down. If they don't make it, fine. But the ball is no worse than the 20-yard line for the Jets.
You don't have to twist my arm to crush Brian Daboll. I totally agree. The bloom is off the rose, big guy, for your Giants head coach. Him undressing his players incessantly on the sideline, no matter who it is. He doesn't come across as very head coach-like. Just kind of a look. Great year last year. Got lucky this year. We'll see how they react. What's your take on the load there?
Well, I was going to come in for Halloween dressed as Brian Daboll simply because I don't have to change much about my appearance. No longer can do that because he's getting a little testy. Here was a back and forth with a few media members after the game when he was asked about kicking that field goal.
Yeah, kick a field goal there, then they have 24 seconds with no timeouts and they need a touchdown, so counted that. I'm making a field goal, and then they'd have 24 seconds with no timeouts, so I have to drive at the length, and our defense was playing really good all game, so that's why I made the decision.
The flip side is the same.
Yeah, there's always a flip side. Yep, I understand what it is.
The game still doesn't end the game, right? You had a chance to, why not take the opportunity there to end the game by getting the 1 yard?
Yeah, I mean, hindsight, I understand the question, completely legit question, but that's a decision that we made try to kick a field goal at Graham, and our defense was, they were like 0 for 12 on third down. They were playing really good, and that's a decision we made. It didn't work out.
All right. Getting a little flustered there. All right, big guy. Well, you got a minute to get your loathe in. Let's go.
My loathe is Kirk Cousins, and I don't loathe Kirk Cousins. I just feel for Kirk Cousins.
And partially it's because I gave out 130 to 1 last Tuesday coming off that Monday Night Football win, where I really like the bet and I like the situation. And honestly, he was playing like an MVP on the road in Lambeau Field yesterday when he got hurt. He was about to lead them to another touchdown drive. He looked awesome playing the best football of his career. And I just loathe seeing one of the good guys in football who does everything the right way, is always criticized, and seems to never react to the criticism. I just loathe that he had to go down the way he did, especially in a contract year.
That's a good one. And we, you know what? We should give, speaking of the Packers, we should give Samich on Friday an opportunity to do a like, love, loathe, but just loathe. And if he doesn't pick Jordan Love, then he's just, he's drunk. But because he admitted on Friday, he admitted last Friday, he's over the kid. Every time I watch Love, he gets worse. I don't know what it is. Maybe coaching, but that is a bad football team right now. We're coming back with professional handicapper Steve Fezzik next.